With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, I was sitting there watching the game thinking, this is magnificent. I started recording my other show, Team 33, as Celtic find themselves 2-0 up in Seville. Then I had to bite my tongue as Celtic conceded goal 1, goal 2, goal 3, and goal 4 as they went on to lose 4-3 against Real Betis in the opening game of the Europa League. Welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. We're looking at the Europa League this week. Alan Morrison, Celtic by Numbers, hello.
Hi. Hi, Andy. You're right.
I'm not too bad. Jaco James, how are you?
Hanging in there. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, it seems like it's been more than a week. I don't know if it has been more than a week, but I don't know what's going on with time at the minute. But Celtic have lost their opening game of the Europa League. We were going into this group stage knowing that Ferencváros were probably the most winnable game. Real Betis, I would have had second, and Bayern Leverkusen, I have as the most difficult game in the group stages. 4-3 it ended up. Albion Ejiofor opened the scoring. Josip Juranovic, interesting that he was the man who took the penalty for Celtic. He doubled the lead before four goals from Real Betis to make it 4-2. And then Tony Ralston with the third goal, sort of consolation in the way. Let's start with something that was interesting about the game, because we all knew how light Celtic were going into the game last night against Betis. We were missing Cal McGregor. We were missing Kyogo, missing several other players. So I want to start with the people who came in and their sort of performance, how you just thought they got on. So we'll start with Ismail Assaro in Cal McGregor's position. Now, there was word that James McCarthy potentially might have had COVID over the last couple of weeks. I can't confirm whether that's true or not, but apparently Paddy Bonner let it slip on the coverage of the game last night that he's been out for the last 14 days. So it was Ismail Assaro that got the nod. He was booked after 8 minutes. And immediately I thought, oh no, this is where it all starts to unfold. James, do you want to start off with Sorrow's performance, what you made of it, and what his data was saying?
Yeah, so he was lucky he didn't get sent off. That's the first thing. Very easily could have. I think that there's kind of choose your own risk profile between Sorrow and McCarthy. So Soro's going to give you that youthful athleticism. He's going to cover ground. But as we've seen consistently now against, it's not a huge sample size, but against better quality competition, his first derby, for example, he was a bit rash at times on January 2nd. So, he just can miss time tackles. He maybe isn't the most... wise and when he deploys his tackling, but he was very good in when he did, meaning that I think he won by far most of his challenges when he did engage, but came along with some of the fouls, and that's obviously a huge risk. I mean, if you have a player at that level that's potentially going to put you a man down, then that's a big problem. And I thought he was very lucky not to get the second yellow when he push the guy down from behind. The flip side of that is McCarthy's not going to give you that athleticism. He's not going to give you the same amount of ground coverage. He very easily could have gotten a yellow later in the game when he's just barely missed stomping on a guy diving in. I think it's more so neither of them are McGregor. Neither of them are going to give anything near what McGregor does. Not that McGregor's the perfect player, but from a profile perspective, it really is an apples and oranges kind of thing. And I don't really have a strong bias or view between Soro and McCarthy. I think, I think your points with the news that he probably had COVID seems like a pretty reliable source given the, and I doubt Packy Bonner would lie that he had those conversations. So probably pretty reliable. Mm-hmm. But that introduces the other issues, which is, you know, even if McCarthy's a starter, then that pushes McGregor to an eight. And then, you know, is that an athletic enough midfield either, given the kind of opposition that we're going to be facing? So, I think he didn't follow some runs in the box. A lot of our guys were culpable in different ways for the different goals. It looks like a team that's not very good defensively right now. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it's new guys coming in, learning the system, whether they fit the system. You know, there's a lot of different questions, but the reality is we're just not a very good defensive team at that level at this point.
Yeah. We might come back to the defense because it was the second time that those four players have lined up in the center back. So that's one way to you can look at the defense, but we'll come back to it. Alan, do you want to touch on Soro or do you want to move on to Ejiati or even Adam Montgomery playing left wing for Celtic for the first time last night?
Yeah, I just think with Soro, my view based on little bits of information and just my own reading is I suspect Soro's future at Celtic is probably not going to be a long one under Postecoglou, right? So this is a player I don't believe is probably trusted to play, but he had to play because there literally was nobody else. And, you know, McCarthy wasn't deemed fit enough. I think both Ralston and he had COVID over the international break. And so what I saw from Soro, which wasn't particularly evident when he broke into the team last year, was a sort of certain nervousness and skittishness, which was in his play, which happens if you're a player that feels under pressure because maybe you think the manager doesn't rate you that much and you're probably trying not to make a mistake. And then, of course, that means you do make mistakes. There was just a couple of odd moments. You know, one time when he got a ball from a throw-in and he literally just thrashed it out of play, which is like really weird. I thought his head had gone completely shortly after the yellow card when he got into an altercation with their players. He brought the guy down from behind and he just looked to have completely lost the place as far as his cold composure had seemed to have gone. And of course, those things are hugely important and they massively disguise the fact that, you know, and I've only just started to capture the data from the game, but, you know, he won a number of really good tackles. He won the possession back at least three times in the opening half an hour. He won clean possession back. The other thing I would say with Soro is that, again, I've only just started to literally watch the game back, is just how much space he was having to cover. It was just extraordinary. Hmm. And you have to kind of give him a bit of leeway in that regard. And this is the consequence of playing two number 10s as number 8s, who looked fantastic when they had the ball. And we all remember Turnbull's through ball to Jota, the pieces of incredible control from Rogic, including the build-up to the penalty. Just astonishing pieces of skill. And what we don't see are the things that don't happen, which are the nasty bits, the horrible bits, the tracking back, the tracking runners. And the wider piece here that I'm trying to make is there's a nice little shot that I had to freeze my frame as I was watching it just before they scored their first goal, where both Rogic and Turnbull are pressing the Betis defence with Ejiati. And you're sort of thinking, that's your central midfield. So how much ground is Soro having to cover? Now, the wingers, had kind of tucked round, but still, that structurally doesn't look good at all. And, you know, I don't think it mattered a huge amount in the end because they played that many long balls. They were looking to, as we talked about before, exploit the space between the quite high Celtic line and the quite deep Joe Hart. And they played a lot of very direct passes, not even caring whether someone was offside or, you know, just balls you wouldn't expect at a professional level because they had no weren't even looking to win a flick. They were just looking to catch Celtic for a fraction, which is exactly what happened when Iglesias, you know, broke the offside trap. That only took that one, that once, and that's a goal, right? At that level, that's what happens. So I think to come back to Soro, he was having to cover an enormous amount of ground. I think he put himself under huge pressure. I think he was already under pressure, and it was a very skittish and nervous performance. I don't think he's seen as the long-term answer, but it's yet another area where Celtic have got tremendous squad management issues in terms of, you know, where we go.
Yeah, it brings me back to your article from last week or the week before, where you rated the different levels of risk with each position, and it was it amber, green, and red?
There wasn't much green.
There was, yeah, exactly. But it was pretty much just amber and red of how bad it could potentially be. And immediately, about a week later, the two red positions are gone. Cal McGregor's out injured. Greg Taylor, I know that was a left back position that was highlighted as well. He was gone. And Kyogo got injured on international duty. And suddenly you're playing Albin Ejiofor, who is technically really the third choice striker, you would say, because Jake Marcus was brought in for a reason. And yeah, you're playing Soro, who is the third choice after James McCarthy, because, you know, James McCarthy can't play. And suddenly you just don't have that much on the bench. And you need depth at this level. But it's just a worrying sign for me, because you can't get any more depth now. This is where we're at. This is what we're working with.
This is what happens when risks become issues.
Exactly.
And guess what? More than one manifests itself at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've actually got three, and that compounds other weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So now suddenly you don't have a Croatian World Cup standard left right back, because he's playing left back. You know, you can't make changes in a game in 28 degree heat where the players are playing a high intensity pressing game. These things compound. And actually, you know, if more than one happens, there are further compounding risks that manifest as major issues. And we saw that last night.
Before we get into the defence and get into the nitty-gritty things, I do want to talk about Jota, because this was a real big test for him as probably the main man up front, if you're looking across that wing of Montgomery, Ejiofor, and Jota. And I thought he was incredibly impressive, at least in the first half. He was really good on the ball, made good decisions when it came to his final calls, and just looked really dangerous for a player who, you know, really hasn't played all that much football over the last 6 or 7 months. How did he perform in the numbers sense, James? Do you know?
Yeah, I actually included him in my kind of good feature of my post-game thread. So he was pretty productive. And I think, you know, I think what Alan will find when he does his pack passing and his impact score is he was pretty decent in getting in space, you know, on the receiving end of some of those. He even dropped some and had a decent number himself progressing the ball forward. Made a lot of runs. He was reasonably successful taking on defenders with the dribble. I think the one area where he's probably going to have to continue to get better is on the decision-making side. So he looks could use some improvement there as far as deciding when to shoot versus, you know, kind of continue on possession to try to get a better chance created. But yeah, I thought, you know, again, he's a higher level player. I mean, that's why his option to buy, I think's what, 6 or 7 million. So I think his talent level shows in that regard. You can definitely see the ability, the speed, the technical skill level. So, yeah, I thought he looked very much in place at that level. He didn't stick out in a negative way for me. And I thought, again, given the circumstances that you describe, and we have all of these circumstances, like Alan said, on the wrist side, but also guys that haven't played that much, you know, Carter Vickers, and, you know, let alone them not playing together. But then some of these guys have not played all that much just generally in recent months, let alone in the heat playing this kind of system that they've probably never played before. I mean, that's what I put in my thread. I mean, I think it was a really good performance given all of these factors. I mean, it's really unfortunate that we ended up losing the game, and, you know, particularly after having been up 2-0, but when you kind of step back and consider all of these factors, you know, and Jota, I think, was a manifestation of that. I mean, that given the circumstances, I thought he was really good.
Yeah, I do think this further compounds my belief in how good Ange Postecoglou is as a manager. If you just sit, stand back and consider what he has had to deal with over the last 3 months alone, and now with Don McKay out the door, what must be going on behind the background that we're not seeing, injuries, basically working off a team sheet of, like, you know, two players in each position if you're being optimistic about it, one player if you're being pessimistic about it. And somehow Celtic went out and dominated Real Betis for the first at least 25, 30 minutes. They were by far and away the better team. And even just the broader stats in terms of possession, shots, shots on goal, those type of things, Celtic definitely didn't come away from that game embarrassed despite conceding four goals. I think it was just really basic mistakes from a defense that, we spoke about the defense potential of Ralston, Welsh, Beaton, and Greg Taylor. I mean, this is a brand new defense of four players who have been playing in four different leagues in the last 4 years, who have never played together before. These mistakes are going to happen, and they're going to happen more often than not if their second game is against a Europa League opposition. That's just how it works.
Well, they're going to happen when you're screened by the likes of Soro and then two number eights who don't offer you much in the defensive side. And to back that up, if you think, you know, I have this defensive action success rate metric, which is an aggregated view of how many challenges and interceptions you win. But, you know, so nothing to do with passing, it's just defensive actions. And Brown would, as a let's call it an old fashioned classic number six, kind of destructive number six, would be average, would be somewhere between 52-55% in his defensive action success rate. Now we've got McGregor, who's actually a respectable 47. Sorrow's actually only 44, but Sorrow wins the possession back more. So McGregor might win a challenge, but it's an untidy challenge. He doesn't actually win the ball back. Sorrow's good at winning a challenge and winning the ball back. That's the difference. We have to look at the two things. But if you then come to Turnbull and Rogic, Turnbull's defensive action success rate is 30%. And Rogic is 16%, which is essentially the same as a traditional striker. So you're just not getting, you know, that's why when people say, well, why didn't we sit back and absorb the pressure? When you're relying on players like Rogic and Turnbull to be the ones that are cutting out the little clever passes that teams like Betis will play between the lines, there's going to be moments when they're just not switched on. They're just not mm-hmm. going to be positioned correctly. They just don't have that anticipation in a defensive setting. You've got midfield eights there that you can only really attack with. That's the only way you can play. So, you know, the defense will get criticism again, but really there's not sufficient coverage there because, again, the squad isn't balanced to match the way that the manager wants to play. But to your point that you made, Ender, in terms of the get that game, you know, Celtic 60-40 on possession, expected goals was even, total shots was even, you know, Celtic's pass accuracy was probably better. They went long a lot, to be fair. You know, shots 17-16. You know, all you go through the game and you go through all the stats that you'd look at for the game and you say that's a pretty even game. Mm. And for Postecoglou to put out a side with the stresses that we have in the squad, and to be able to put in that performance under those physical conditions as well as the conditions that the squad are in, I think is laudable. And I don't think we should be disheartened about it at all.
No, I don't think so either.
The one context I'll add is when I re-looked at the game this morning, I think there's a plausible narrative as to the sequence of play, shall we say, or as we geeks like to say, game state. So I think it's plausible and reasonable to think that they underestimated us, given the state of where we're at, and our availability in the squad. And I think that was reflected in who they selected. I mean, they played a 40-year-old right winger. I mean, he was a good player in his day, but he's 40 years old and a right winger. And he's, you know, he's a substitute basically for them, an impact sub. Bravo hasn't played for them this season yet. He started. Their left wing plays kind of striker and left wing, but he doesn't play all that much. And one of their two main midfielders didn't start either in their pivot role. So, you know, they definitely didn't come at us with their A team, or their, you know, their top starting 11. And I think they, it's reasonable to think that they maybe underestimated us a little bit, and to their detriment, we cold cocked them in that first half hour. And then they seemed to kind of dial it up a notch, and they scored four goals in like 20 minutes. And then if you look at all of the game data from the point of which they scored the fourth goal, they went into cruise control. You know, their pressing collapsed, our possession shot through the roof. They kind of just moved back and sat back and really, you know, didn't do all that much or try. I think they had one shot for the remainder of the game of any consequence. So I think that's important context to all of this, which is, you know, we absolutely deserve, the team deserves credit for playing and performing that way. But I think to extrapolate what happened yesterday into the fact that we're going to, you know, destroy them when they come to Celtic Park. you know, they have a couple of high profile signings that haven't even really been incorporated into their side yet. And, you know, they have a lot of room to change that starting 11 to get better, and maybe take us more seriously from the start. Now we'll be stronger too, hopefully. So it'll be a totally different dynamic. So I don't think you can extrapolate a lot from yesterday into what might happen in the return leg, as a result of all of these kind of weird factors.
No, I'd agree with all that. I'd agree with all that. That's fair. Absolutely fair. In terms of you looking at the overall, you know, some of the possession stats for Celtic would have been bumped up in that last 20 minutes, and they definitely dialed it in. I think we play them in the last game of the group. We've got to hope that they probably have beaten everybody else by then, and they come back to Celtic Park with another kind of weakened team.
Yeah, I think it's December by the time we play them again. Well, if Neil Lennon's estimation of how much the fans made an impact on last season, then, you know, it could be a handy enough win for Celtic at Celtic Park next year.
That goes back. I'm sorry, real quick, Andrew. That goes back to what I think the reality of what this is going to mean. I mean, all of these structural issues that Alan and I have been talking about relative to the defense, the spacing, you know, maybe some misshapen pieces in the Jenga tower, is we're going to attack, and these games are going to be hair-raising, exciting. And if we have some luck, we can beat anybody with that kind of game. I mean, if we, you know, a couple of Turnbull's long-range shots go in, you know, those kind of dynamics that in one game can easily occur. But the flip side of that is that we're giving up enough chances to quality teams that if a team like Betis comes in fully equipped and fully motivated and decides that they want to hang six or seven goals against the team and have some luck that goes on top of that, we run that risk too, meaning that, you know, we're giving up enough quality chances when teams of that level are dialed in that, you know, it's goes one way or the other. I mean, we're going to get some wild swings here potentially where we might beat Leverkusen at home and lose like 6-1 to Leverkusen in Germany. I mean, that's the kind of swings that I could reasonably see, because of just how much is going on, how much attacking that's going on in both directions. I mean, these are really wild games in that regard, and they're fun to watch as long as, you know,
you win.
As long as you win, or at least it's competitive.
This is Ange ball, really. So that's what you're it isn't.
Again, I know what you're saying, but I don't, you know, I don't. Do you think he wants to be giving up nearly 3xG? You know, he doesn't want to. Does he want to be playing Soro? He doesn't. Yeah. Does he want to having an open midfield like that? Does he want to have fullbacks that aren't actually, you know, one who's doing his best and the other one who isn't a left back? He doesn't want any of those things. So I think, you know, we have to kind of, I don't want to hang that one on him in terms of, you know, there was lots of comments I saw about, oh, why didn't we just close the game down? Why didn't we manage the game better and all this sort of thing? And exactly for the reasons that I said, that would have been absolute suicide to have tried to do that last night. You see, he actually has to attack because it's the only way to get the best out of the players that we've got.
Yeah, we also don't have the players to close down a game like that. Like we didn't have the players on the pitch to be a possession based team. I mean, even if you look at the Champions League, the Young Boys game against Manchester United, when United went down to 10 men, they parked the bus. They didn't have a single player on the pitch that could control the pace of the game. And they lost the game to a team that have only won 3 games in the Champions League ever. Like, that's just what happens. If you don't have the players to do it, you just can't do it. And this is the Huddle Breakdown. If you're listening on Spotify, be sure to subscribe to the podcast network, and you can subscribe on the YouTube as well. There's a few comments coming in. Thanks to Grafting Diamond, who left a super like, as well as Marco, who left one earlier on. Grafting Diamond, I'll actually get to his comment. He says that if you could clone one player from the current squad, who would it be? For me, it would be Calmac, so we could use him as a six and as an eight. I would probably agree. I'd clone Calmac a couple of times, maybe, potentially. Maybe make a right-footed Cal McGregor, just, you know, because of my left-footed bias, according to the last podcast. There is a comment that came in on Twitter beforehand from Boys Analytics, from Ross. He was asking about our left-back situation. He asked, who is our best left-sided centre-back? And if you guys would give Scales a run in that role, given it's natural side, and he's also a tall and physical left back as well, if we want to use him on that side. So yeah, the issue between the center backs has been one that's been coming up over the last couple of weeks with Starfelt. You highlighted, Alan, about him switching from right to left depending on how much we want to protect him from the opposition. It was Carter Vickers and Starfelt last night. Is it time to change that up a little bit? Is it time to maybe try out Welsh and Carter Vickers, or give Scales a run? Like the game against Livingston, for example, this weekend, is that not the perfect opportunity to see if Liam Scales is up to the level he's needed?
So I think adding more change and variance, I don't think is the way to go. So of all the positions on the field in terms of, you know, because, I mean, like, if example, look at Jota, right? I mean, Jota was... One of the things that I'd really loved about him in the two games I've seen is how hungry he is for the ball. And he actually got on the ball a tremendous amount for a winger. So, for example, you know, whereas Forrest might get 30 passes in the game, 20, 25, Jota was like 55 against Ross County. But he was knackered at the end of the game. And these are the sort of players you want to kind of take off. I mean, Jota shouldn't have been on the pitch at the end last night. He couldn't cover, he couldn't defend, never mind get forward. But centre-backs are different. So centre-backs, you know, generally don't have to do as much running. They'll cover less ground. So I would have thought at the moment, Postecoglou wants to create a little island of certainty and stability in the side. And I wouldn't see Hart, Starfelt and Carter Vickers being swapped out too much in the coming weeks, if it means building that understanding, at least having some stability in the team, given the absolute carnage that's going on around every other part of the pitch. So, could Liam Scales do a job in that regard? I have no idea. I've never seen Liam Scales play in my life, so I have no idea. Chucking him in, even at home to Raith Rovers in the League Cup, would be quite a risk. So my money will be on that those three hearts, Starfelt, Carter Vickers, won't be rotated unless there's some further injury in the next few weeks.
Is that more down to like the chicken and egg sort of scenario? How do we find out if Liam Scales is good enough for this level if we never take the risk in playing him? For like, we have Liam Scales there. He is a tall, strong left back who can play left centre back and left back. If we're in a league like the Scottish League, there is no better opportunity for me than playing against a team like Livingston, who aren't going to really attack you all that much, to see if he's got the head, the athleticism, the brain to do it.
Well, he's going to be put under a tremendous pressure at Livingston. He's going to be fielding high balls all day long, right? So it comes down to the trust of the manager. Okay, I'll use that word trust, and it's hugely important. Okay. Postecoglou, there was players on that pitch last night that could barely run by the, you know, from about 70 minutes out, Jota being the most obvious, but there were others. I mean, Rogic, Turnbull, you know, and none of those players on the bench were used. Scales was on the bench. You know, you could have made a case in theory of saying, do you know what? I'm going to take Jota off. I'm going to put Scales on. I'm going to put Juranovic on the right, and I'm going to put Montgomery on left back or something like that. And he could have worked out and juggled the pack a little bit, and he didn't do that. So, you know, does he trust Scales to be thrown in away at Livingston on a ground that Celtic, I don't believe, ever won? I think last time Celtic beat Livingston away, hadn't they changed ground or something? I might be wrong about that, but I don't, you know, you've got to go back a long way since the last time we won it with Livingston. So no, I don't think he'll change that centre-back pairing. And that's no reflection on how good Scales maybe or is or isn't. I simply don't know.
what about Welsh, James? What's gone wrong with Welsh? Because it seemed to me like he was the best centre back at the start of the season, well ahead of where Starfelt was at. And I know we're giving him the opportunity to bet in, but It just seems like he's fallen completely out of favor since Carter Vickers has come to the club.
Yeah, I think that goes back to an issue of levels. So, you know, Carter Vickers' pedigree, securing that loan deal, oftentimes there will be some level of agreement, whether it's in writing or not, that they're coming to play. I mean, that, you know, someone in his situation is not going to want to come to Celtic and sit on the bench.
Yeah.
Given where his career is at and given that he probably had some kind of options in what to do and where to go. Starfelt, again, we spent almost $5 million on him. So there's a, whether that's right or wrong, there's going to be a degree of baggage that comes with that. You know, we see that in sports and decision makers all the time where, you know, people get vested because they made a decision and they try to ride it out. And to be honest, you know, to be, I think, fair to Starfelt, I thought he was fine yesterday in the context. Agreed. You know, he was actually one of the better over. I bet your defensive action success rate for him was probably pretty good for you once you get through the whole game, Alan. It's my guess. and some of the issues, like Alan said, I mean, I think most of the issues that the back line had last night or yesterday were due to the lack of coverage or protection, as Alan said, but also the fact that they haven't played together, some communication issues. The goal on the guy that the striker that made the front post run that was kind of in between Starfelt and Carter Vickers, could he pass him on with better communication? Or
Can I give you my notes on each goal and you can tell me if I'm completely out of my mind? Because I actually took notes when they happened. So the first goal, Carter Vickers goes to try win the duel. He loses. He gets there too late. The guy gets through and they score. The second goal is just a basic ball behind the defense. And then they, you know, he dummies Hart to pass it across the goal. The third goal for me is an interesting one because I would say the majority of people have Starfelt at fault for it because he loses his man, the man gets in front of him, the ball goes across, his man scores. But for me, if you look at the frame, Tony Ralston is working back and he actually passes his man on to Ismail Asaro, who goes to him. Ralston is then supposed to do the loop. He's supposed to come back and be coverage for that ball coming through. He basically strolls back. He doesn't make it back in time. The ball comes across before he's even near it and the ball gets across. So I think if he's working a little bit harder, he's making that goal. And then the fourth goal, it just comes from a poor enough header from Adam Montgomery. Now, he was on his back foot, so I'll give him that. He headers it back into the danger area, which it's, you know, it's volleyed.
And that was a heck of a finish. Well, I mean, it was an amazing finish. Goal.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons, so when if you look at an XG model, if a shot from a corner has got a lower XG than a shot from the same position in open play, and the reason for it is because there's just so many damn bodies in the way. That ball went through seven players. It was almost like a corridor opened up for that. And that Celtic concede so many goals like that in Europe, where it just seemed to find that one corridor, and find its way through right into the corner. I mean, of all those goals, I think the third one is the one I would be most concerned about. And it's not even for the actual cross and finish, because if it's Ronaldo that's the striker in that scenario, everyone's going on about what brilliant movement it is to get into that position and the quality of the ball in. So that piece of it, the quality of the ball, which was completely under no pressure, that's the issue, and the finish are fantastic, right? But the reason for the goal is because of the lack of coverage on the right hand side. Ralston is stood in a little area of the pitch with acres of green space around him and no support at all. So I think Soro doesn't come back quickly enough, and Rio Rogic is not covering on that side of the pitch adequately either, and I don't know where Jota is either. So there's just complete breakdown in the structure for that third goal. And I think that would be the one of the goals. The second one, the offside one, we are going to concede goals like that. Sorry, people, that's going to happen. It's going to happen quite a few times. Yep. Get used to it, it'll happen. I think the first one was good play. Miranda, you know, the ball's bobbing about. Yes, could people have cleared it better? But, you know, Miranda arrives at pace, quick 1-2, and he's in. Yeah, it's a good piece of play. And
great touch.
Exactly.
Well, that's a dream. If you commit your defender and you're able to get there first, you're going to score.
The fourth one is just one of these horrible goals that Celtic concede in Europe, which is a bit unlucky, but also, but you know, the third one's the one that's really highlighted the structural issues that we've been talking about for me. Mm. Anyway,
We'll move on from the defense then, because I think we've touched on it fairly comprehensively there. James, you look like you have.
Yeah, because Ross asked the question, I wanted to just mention one more thing on Scales. I think, you know, in what I've looked at, and you know him better than I do, Enda, but I've just looked at his data history. I don't think he's played left back a lot. He's played wing back and he's played left center back from what I've seen.
He hasn't played left back in a back four all that much. He played a couple of games for the Republic of Ireland there, but nothing major.
So the idea that a guy of his size and history is going to easily shift into an inverted fullback role in Ange Postecoglou's system, I think is absolutely crazy. As far as that being likely, I mean, maybe the guy's, you know, the perfect fit. I don't know, but, I haven't seen him play, but he's played wing back and he's played left center back in a three. I don't see how that's even close to being an inverted fullback in the current system that we're playing. Yeah. I would think he's probably depth at the center back position. And this is part of my question is, I mean, from what I've seen, it looks like he profiles like a left center back in a back three, which we don't play. So back to the transfer window and, you know, Dermot Desmond owns that club and, you know, who knows why he got signed.
Yeah. There's an, I'd like to see him get his opportunity in a cup game or something just to see what he's like.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, hopefully he turns good and having a talented, 23-year-old left-footed left center back would be great. That's what we were kind of hoping Hjelde would become. So he left, and maybe Scales can fill that role. I just my comment is more specifically about the left back role.
Yeah.
In this, I see that as being the least likely scenario and that seems to be the one that a lot of people are talking about.
I think if he's coming in, it's going to be at left center back. I can't see it being. Yeah. In a back four as left back. He may well slot in. I think he has the attributes to do it, and he has the brains to do it. He's shown that he's adaptable and he's strong and big and fast and athletic, and he's good on the ball as well. So like he could well slot in as the left back, no problem, but I just haven't seen him do it for the club. But it's an interesting one. I really hope to see Liam Scales play in the starting team at some point this year. One comment coming in from Adam Beanie Smith, who's asked me this question a couple of times. And have you ever been to Celtic Park as a paying supporter, or do you only like talking about Celtic to get paid? Well, I have news for you, Adam. I have actually been to Celtic Park a couple of times, especially growing up. But the main point I would want to make is that I absolutely do not get paid for doing this. Like if you want to pay me to talk about Celtic, then, you know, like my DMs are open on Twitter, but I don't get paid to do this. So, I mean, I hope that answers your question. Let's move on from the defense. I want to talk about something that has come up. You, James, you've brought it up a couple of times, and somebody asked it on Twitter as well. Is David Turnbull good enough for this level? Because I've no doubt about it, how good technically this player is, especially with set pieces, passes, you know, sheer ability on the ball. But is he going to come up short in Europe because of his physical attributes, because he's just simply not quick enough?
That's a good question. I haven't thought about it in that kind of binary term. I'll put it this way. I don't think he's likely to reach that kind of sustainable level playing in this system with the people around him. Meaning that I think he may have enough quality that if he was kind of optimized in a system that suited his strengths and kind of supported his weaknesses, then, you know, I think he very likely had, because that was Alan and I have talked about repeatedly, that his skill level on the ball. And I did a piece this past week on looking at his shot history using StatsBomb data. And I think there's a really good case to be argued that he does have, you know, kind of like, you know, what I say, like an NBA 3-point shooting skill. Like there's some guys that are good from 25 feet. I think he legit has a shooting skill potentially from outside the box. And we've seen some of the set piece deliveries, and, you know, we saw that again with the one that Ralston scored on. So I think there's a lot of value there. I think it's a question of system and how he's going to be protected and the things that he just may not ever be that good at. And, Whether or not that's in Ange's system with the people around him, I am skeptical. I think it's going to be rough. And it certainly not doesn't help when you have, you know, him and Rogic paired together. You know, that's almost like a worst case scenario in them both. I mean, I put it in my thread. I think they were something like 6 for 22 in duels in the attacking half yesterday. So that's not good enough. You know, physically, that's just not good enough. If they're going to be attacking and that far forward, you know, that press, the lack of the teeth in the press, that the risk reward of doing that is significant. And, you know, that's an issue. So, yeah, I love watching him. I think he's just terrific. I mean, some of the balls and the deliveries he makes, that pass to Jota, I mean, that's the romantic part of it. That's the great fun in seeing that kind of skill, same with Rogic. But then when you get back into the practical parts of it, it's, you know, that's the hard part.
Alan, so, do you want to hop in?
Yeah. So just on Turnbull. So, you know, somebody asked a question earlier about which player would you clone. And so I'm going to once again really annoy a lot of people and say I would have cloned Ryan Christie, and I'd have had a right-footed Christie and a left-footed Christie. Because if you want the profile, when we talk about a number eight, of the sort of player we need to have in those positions that Rogic and Turnbull playing, it's Ryan Christie. And if you compare him just to Turnbull this season, you know, you've got a player there who's got a higher XG. So Christie's is more of a goal threat overall than Turnbull. They're roughly equivalent on expected assists in terms of, you know, from open play I'm talking about. Turnbull has got very high-end skills in creating chances from set pieces. And as I mentioned, defensive action success, you know, Turnbull's like 30%, Christie's like over 40%. So if you want a profile of a number eight, you know, Christie is probably more of a goal threat, is equally as creative, and does a ton of work more defensively than Turnbull. That's the sort of player you need in that position. So that's you know, singing Christie's praises. I'm not trying to sort of damn Turnbull. I just don't think he's built for that role.
Yeah, I think it comes down to the system more than anything. You're not necessarily saying Turnbull is better than Turnbull. It's just for this system, he is.
Yeah, exactly. And as James said, Rogic is even more extreme with that profile. You know, Rogic is more creative than Turnbull, probably a little bit more of a goal threat actually. But his defensive contributions just is more of a striker than what do you expect from a Lee Griffiths than you would a Ryan Christie. So that's the issue, right? That's the benefit of benchmarking and profiling players in that way, is that, you know, you can have that conversation, as it doesn't detract from the beauty of the pass that he put through to Jota, where he took out seven players, you know, to send Jota through to try and score the third. It doesn't detract from that. It doesn't detract from his wonderful shooting. It's just, if you were going to play a system with a 10, then, or someone just tucked in behind a striker, yeah, I think he would do a good job there.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't take away the artistry of football, because, I mean, you get to the stage where, yeah, sure, you can have loads of athletic, quick, fast, strong players, but if you have nobody that can do like Tom Rogic did in the Scottish Cup final a few years back, then what's the point? You know, that's the whole point of enjoying football. Let's move on to the Livingston game then this Sunday real quick. What changes? Does anything change going into this game? Is it the same starting lineup? Is it the same dangerous midfield? What do you think's happening here? Because for me, I would say, based on last year's experience of playing Livingston, which was fucking miserable, Celtic have the pace and the dominance to tear them to shreds, but I think Livingston throw up a lot of chaos, and Celtic don't really deal well with chaos in the defence.
Yeah, it really is a different animal playing them there. I mean, it just, even more so than going to Kilmarnock was when they were in the league, or Hamilton. Livingston was one of the first, to my knowledge, one of the first SPFL clubs to embrace analytics a little more. They actually had a guy working there who's now at Man City. So, you know, they've put some thought into their recruitment, given what is a very limited resource team. I mean, I think they're the lowest wage bill in the league. So they've actually accomplished a lot with what limited resources they've had. And part of that is they've optimized their recruitment based off of that home pitch. And they are really tough in that environment as a result. And it is such a special situation, the game conditions there. And they play in a way leveraging, you know, it's I talk about the optimization, you know, so they recruit within a system. And the system's designed to optimize the conditions of them at home. And that results in them getting absolutely torn to shreds away to Celtic. But they don't care because that's not what they're optimizing for. They were never probably going to beat Celtic reliably at Celtic Park anyway. So whether they lose 6-0 or you know, 3-1 is almost irrelevant relative to, you know, do they beat Ross County at home? Do they beat, you know, Dundee at home? So I suspect we'll see Ibada come back in. I suspect, you know, those were tough conditions to throw Montgomery into. And I think he did okay, but he was not, you know, a huge factor in the game. So I suspect Jota will head back to the left. And then we'll see if McCarthy's up for starting, whether McGregor's back being fit. But they're going to lob a lot of balls and they're going to, like you said, Enda, they're going to look for winning second balls. And, you know, they gave Aberdeen a real tough time at home. And, you know, so it's one of those games where you just kind of hope some of the chaos breaks in our favor and that we don't get, you know, like a red card or something. Because that's what happens when you start introducing chaos. And I think, Alan, you may know better, man. I think their pitch is a little smaller, too. That's part of the optimization here.
It's always a little bit smaller.
I was
actually going to say my local team in the League of Ireland are the Livingston of the League of Ireland, and they were playing the two top teams in the last 2 weeks, and the pitch was about 3 to 4 yards more narrow as the week went on. You know, it's what they do, and, you know, fair play to them. That's what they need to do to beat these teams. So, I mean, if you can do it, why not?
Yeah, and it's, you know, we talked about Skyball with Barnsley, what they did in the championship last year, and I think you know, a lesser degree, that's kind of what Livingston's doing. I mean, they're just going to lump it up and create chaos, like you said, Enda. And, you know, there's questions about how well equipped we are to handle that. And, you know, given the fact that we only had made one sub on Thursday and the conditions and the amount of energy that was expended, you know, is Ralston going to be fully recharged? And I mean, some of those guys really put shifts in. So, you know, it's a huge game. I mean, this is a massive game, and we should, by all rights, it should be one of these games where we are reasonably comfortable, but we never are going there. So, and I think there's a lot of legitimate reasons. You know, we've been a lot more comfortable at Hamilton than we've been at Livingston. And I think that's because Livingston's just better run.
Yeah. Any changes you'd make, Alan, going into this?
I don't with who? No, seriously, there's nothing you can do, right? It's literally going to be a case of who's fit enough to play. There's nobody else. If there were, they would have been on the bench on Thursday. I'm just to add a bit of context, additional color, I suppose, to what James has said. So, listen, they haven't won a game this season, right? But they got the first point in the last SPFL game. In their three away games, they haven't even scored a goal. And actually, they were averaging around 50, 60 long balls in away games. Now, we thought that Betis played a lot of long balls last night. I think they played something like 50-something. You know, at home, Livingston average around 80 to 90 long balls.
I love that so much.
this is how mental it's going to be.
That's beautiful.
Right? 80 to, but off of that, against Aberdeen, they managed to get 12 shots away. And against Motherwell, they got 13 shots away off of that long ball game at home. And, you know, they lost both games 2-1. They actually battered Aberdeen and conceded quite a lot of XG, I think over 2 to Motherwell. So they had mixed results there. But yeah, it's going to be chaos. But yeah, in terms of changes, who? There's nobody.
I don't know. I don't want to suggest scales again, but I don't know.
go to a factory with scales.
Why would you throw a kid like? Why would you throw the kid? I know he's not a kid, but you know he's never played at this level. Yeah. Why would you throw him in away at Livingston to head away 90 eyeballs? He just wouldn't do that to anybody.
It's a fair point.
The bookies are going to set an over under on concussions with that many highballs for the game. I mean, it's crazy.
Before we finish up on our preview. This is actually an interesting point from Ronnie McAlpin coming in on YouTube. Plastic pitches, it's always brought up. It's always a thing. I don't really want to get into the whole idea of a plastic pitch and whether they should or should not be allowed. Does Ange Ball work on a plastic pitch? Like, can Celtic realistically play the fast-paced football if it's bobbling around like it usually does?
Well, I'll go first. I mean, first of all, the whole concept of plastic pitch is, I think, too binary because, you know, in the last 30 years, the technology and the quality of them has evolved massively. So there are a lot of pretty decent plastic pitches out there. They just aren't at Livingston. So whether it translate to, you know, what in a grass pitch might be analogous as a cow pasture, I don't know. We'll see. It's harder. I how dry is it going to be? Are they going to water it? Probably not, you know? So is it going to be bouncing around? And so this is where they're engineered for chaos. You know, I suspect it's going to be a challenge and you know, why would you optimize for this one, maybe two games a year? You wouldn't. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. You know, that gets us back to, we need to recruit Duffy against, you know, Dykes.
They play Dykes. Yeah.
Right. Which was insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just got to do your best and hope that you catch some breaks and win the game. I mean, that's their competitive advantage, and they're smart to leverage it because who's going to try and maximize at the Macaroni. That's not reasonable.
It's the best stadium with the worst football, but the best football at the same time, and the best by far and away, the best mascot going, you know. It's absolutely phenomenal stuff. But shout out to Shane Duffy though. There was a lot of discussions of Shane Duffy's performances last year on the show, but a couple of man of the match performances for Brighton in the Premier League. He was playing in a back three for the Republic of Ireland against Portugal and against Serbia. He had the most successful passes, the most passes and the most successful pass rate. He had a 96% passing accuracy rate for Ireland against Serbia playing as a back three. And it is nice to see him back to the player he is. And it'll probably come out in his book or whatever in a podcast of the next couple of years, what went wrong. But when you hear more and more stories about what was going on last season with the manager, it's not exactly massively surprising that there's loads of players playing better than they were last year. Scott Brown said did you see the Scott Brown stuff before we finish up? He basically said, and I'm only remembering it by bits and pieces, but he basically said that Neil Lennon turned up, said same team, same subs, didn't tell them about shape, didn't work on set pieces. And it was basically just go out and try win the game. That's what Celtic was last year. So it's hardly surprising that we ended up with what we ended up.
Yeah, we're in a very different place.
Yes.
I don't want to get into salacious gossip. I mean, Rodgers did a nice job with Boyata simplifying his game. Just and that's what I said to you a couple of weeks ago about Starfelt and Postecoglou. I think Postecoglou has had more or less the same conversation with Starfelt about just keep your game as simple as you possibly can. Get it, give it. Don't try and overplay it. But actually, I think in the last two games he's moved on and he's actually starting to move. He's starting to run with the ball. He's progressing with the ball at feet, which is quite even last night he did it three or four times. Incredible.
And it wasn't calamitous either.
It wasn't. So yep. It is confidence.
I was doing this every time he did it. I was like,
these are all parts of it. He's going to get a hell of a examination against Livingston. I did write an article years ago now on plastic pitches. I did a comparison of results against the similar teams, because it makes basically teams that have plastic pitches tend to be quite lower level ranked teams, right? And long story short, I couldn't find any difference in Celtic's results between playing in plastic and not. In one sense, I know there is a huge disparity in the quality of the actual pitches, but they should be a pretty uniform surface. The ball doesn't bounce in a way that you'd expect, but it shouldn't be bowling about all over the place because it's a completely even sort of surface. The problem is, and what will happen on Sunday is that Livingston won't water it. So it'll be sticky, which means it'll just be unusual. But every club has an all weather pitch for training on. So again, there's no real excuses as such. All the players have played on these pitches before. You just got to believe that your football and your better players are going to win the game, and that's the way you got to approach it.
I just think they're bad for your joints. Like, if you ever played on one, that's horrendous afterwards for the next 48 hours. Ronnie McAlpin's in touch. He said, Enda, that's not correct. Brown was referring to when he first started playing football 20 years ago. As I said, I just glanced at this. I didn't know if I saw it on Twitter, so I presumed it was about Neil Lennon.
There you go. That's what you get for gossiping, Enda.
This is not the huddle breakdown, you know. This is not what we do.
People don't come here for facts. People come here for salacious rumors. That's what we're all about.
There you go.
We're all about the salaciousness on this show. Anyway, I guess before we finish up, anything else we want to talk about before we wrap this show up for the week?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, no, I'm all right. Can't wait for Raith Rovers game. It might be a game with less stress. that's probably nonsense as well.
Well, we shall hope and see what happens against Livingston this weekend. Hopefully there's a good performance and a good win to talk about next week. But if there's not, we will talk about it regardless. This is the Huddle Breakdown. We are the podcast to look at the performance and the XG and everything else going along with Celtic. If you're listening for the first time, you can subscribe to the podcast channel in Spotify, on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and we're on YouTube as well. The Breakdown Inc. is the name of the YouTube channel. James, Alan, thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, all right. Guys.
All right, thanks week. For watching. We shall chat to you next week. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.